Podcasting 2.0 for November 20th, 2020, episode number 12. We're breaking code. Gotta stretch those words out even longer. Make sure I stay in the music. It's Friday once again. It's Friday once again, everybody. We are meeting with the board of podcastindex.org. And now the man who did a decade's worth of work in 3 months, Dave, the namespace slayer, Jones.
I guess our first topic of the board meeting is discussing that $175 million offer we have to buy a podcast index from Spotify, right? I mean, no. I voted down. I don't think we should do it.
No. I don't. I think they're too small for us.
Oh, yeah. I'm holding out for at least $250. I mean, if Megaphone got $250, we got to. I mean, like, we don't do anything. We don't do 1% of what they do, so we should get at least.
Yeah, you know, that's at least, yeah, a couple mil right there.
Yeah, sure.
All right, everybody. This is where we discuss podcasting 2.0. We bring you up to speed and all the developments, and these literally are developments taking place at podcastindex.org and our sister site where we hang out, podcastindex.social, which is a Mastodon site, so you can follow at Adam at podcastindex.social and at Dave at podcastindex.social. And, man, we got stuff to talk about this week.
Every week.
There's a lot going on. Maybe let's just start with a bug, since it affected people who might have been listening to this podcast. If you were listening on Podcast Addict, we found out that the way I was publishing with doing the transcripts later broke the player, which was really quite interesting, actually.
So what do you want to say? Why? Like, tell your
I'll explain the process. Okay. Yeah, because the process is important because I think I'm not the only person who records and publishes this way. After I do a show, any show, I want to get it out as soon as possible, especially the No Agenda show, but, you know, because that's also streamed live. But I want to get it out as soon as possible, and it takes time to, you know, get some chapter stuff going and to get the transcripts done by otter.ai. So what I've been doing, since it's very difficult with caching and how apps access the feed, and then, you know, if a change is reflected across apps, it's a mess. So what didn't work out is publishing my feed and then later adding the tags for captions and for chapters, because that typically wouldn't get that wouldn't flow through even with an update to the index. It's just not.
Yeah, because the GUID doesn't change.
Right.
So exactly. It doesn't think it's anything new about it.
Yeah. And if you change the GUID, then you get the episode twice in most podcast apps. So, it's quite ugly. So I decided that the easiest way would just be to create dummy URLs, which I knew would be the correct URLs. And that's kind of a fun little game that I have to play with Hypercatcher, because Hypercatcher has an API endpoint that becomes the URL. So these community chapters flow through even after the show is published, because the URL remains the same. But I still have to put that into the feed first, so that at least the information flows through to the apps. And then for some reason, on Podcast Addict, and this will take a day or two before I have all my junk together and, you know, have the transcripts uploaded and everything, just because it's a 3.5 hour show and I'm tired and it takes time, and, you know, I'll do it tomorrow.
Well, I mean, even if the community, you know, does the chapters, man, that still takes a while for a 3.5 hour show. I mean,
that's a lot
of content.
Yeah, you can't. And of course, it's a catch-22, because you can't use Hypercatcher to author the chapters unless the show is in the feed.
Okay.
Just to make it easy. So Hypercatcher, as a personal app, podcast app, you can suggest chapters. And then as the podcaster, you can go into a back end system, which is Hypercatcher Studio. And then you can approve what anyone submits, which I like a lot, because it's a lot of work. I just did the show, then to listen to it again and put markers in. Now, I can enhance it with images and add URLs, but if people at least are doing the markers and the titles, it's extremely handy.
Okay, let me ask you a question. So if the the chapters that you're creating in HyperCatcher Studio, it obviously depends on the episode being in the feed, but does it depend on, like, but the URL that it gives you for the chapter's file, that's not somehow tied to the feed? Like, you could use that anywhere, right?
The way HyperCatcher Studio determines the URL is based upon the GUID.
Okay.
So I know that my...
But once you have the URL, you can stick it anywhere.
Then I can stick it in. Exactly. But it's empty. And if it, and again, until I've created the first entry in the chapter file, that URL doesn't actually exist.
Cause I'm just thinking that what you could have is a dummy feed that you put the podcast into, just long enough to get a working URL, and then stick that URL into the real feed with the real podcast.
Then, now, do I do this with one leg in the air and one hand tied behind my back and with a big spliff in my face? Is that how, this is going to introduce a lot of other errors.
I see nothing wrong with this. This is going to work fine.
Well, the Podcast Addict developers, I'm sorry, I don't know his name. He said that
Xavier.
Xavier. Yes. He says what's going on is that on Android, because it works, I think I haven't received any other bug reports, but this is specific to Android and the Google Player, that Play engine or something. And for some reason, it's borking out when it sees that there's a 404, which is, I don't think anything should bork out on a 404, but it does. So he's already patched that and has uploaded to beta, but we know that'll take a while before it gets through and everyone updates. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to create the actual files. So chapters wasn't an issue because chapters I can get going really quick. I can just make a start entry and you're done. Then that URL is active.
Like you just put intro 0 minutes, right, and then go.
Exactly. But for the transcript, it just takes time. It takes a couple hours for the transcript to be done.
Oh, really? And does it take that long to process?
Yeah. Well, it's 3.5 hours of two dudes yapping.
Yeah. I guess so.
And it tries to do it. I mean, if I really want to do it nicely, then I'd let it, because it still has problems. You can identify, okay, here are the voices. You say, this is Adam, this is John, or this is Adam, this is Dave. But it still goes through the whole transcript every single time, tries to figure it out. If it doesn't know, then you have to say, okay, this is Adam. But it doesn't just replace speaker one with Adam all the way down. It has to be done for every single entry, unless you want it to run for hours on end. It's far from perfect. And I forget what the Buzzsprout guys are using, but I might want to switch to that.
I thought they were using Otter.
I think
it starts with a T.
It was something else, I thought. I can't remember what. They suggested two of them, and Otter was simple, and it's not too expensive, because, you know, it's not free, nor should it be.
I think what he told us started with a T. But I can't remember the name of it.
I'll figure it out. This is important because as developers, you have use cases and workflows in mind that can vary widely from publisher to publisher. So, and especially, you know, it's like chapters itself have become something incredibly cool. I love showing my chapters in PodFriend because PodFriend pops it up like a slideshow.
Yeah.
You know, it's really pretty. And then, you know, that is if you have an image URL in there. And then
same with
HyperCatcher does the same. Yeah. Yep. And so I love showing that. And that's more than, to me, that's a huge benefit. It's not just I want to skip ahead to something. Now it's like, that's interesting. What's that chart they're talking about? Oh, there's the chart. It popped right up. Now you have, you know, like a third dimension that you're adding to the podcast, which I love. I'm very excited about this.
Does HyperCatcher Studio allow you to specify those things without chapter markers, like silent basically silent chapters where it doesn't give you a jump point. It just shows you the image. I don't remember if he supported that or not.
No, in fact, wait a minute. It's ask again. Just an image, not a URL?
Well, no, like in the spec, and it was a recent change that we made, sort of
to the namespace spec, you mean?
Yeah. It was a change we made, maybe a week and a half before it finalized, or 2 weeks before it finalized. We put in the table of contents property where you can basically say, you know, here's a podcast, here's a chapter marker that starts at this many seconds, but it does not go, it should not be visible in the table of contents for the chapters, so that it's not a jump point that you can jump to with the player. It just triggers an action.
That's a good question. In fact, on Podfriend, I don't even think you can use it as jump point. Oh no, you can. So it shows the main image window rotates, and then below there is a list. That's your table of contents. Yeah, it does list everything. It does.
Okay.
I don't mind. You know, that's okay. That's okay for me. I just love it when apps actually show the image. Like, I think Podverse shows little thumbnails and has a more traditional approach to chapters as jump points. Down at the bottom of the episode. Well, regardless, all of this shit is cool. I mean, it really is. And of course, leave it to me to break stuff, because, you know, who else would figure this one out? But oh yeah.
That's your time, talent, and treasure. That's your talent.
That is, yes, it's my superpower.
Yeah.
But it's good that we find this out. Despite all of that, still it's pretty foolproof. I mean, the system works, the chapters are flowing, the transcripts are flowing. I'm very happy. This is good.
Still got a lack of tools, really. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I mean, there, yes, the tools exist. I mean, we're talking about Hypercatcher Studio, we're talking about, you know, Buzzsprout's tools and those kinds of things, but they just need to mature, so that average human beings can do it. Well, but you know, then again, average human beings are not doing well, most of what you're doing. I mean, like they're just going into their host and hitting publish and dropping their episode.
Right.
In.
But the easiest thing, for every podcast, and I know this just from experience, and we started this with the No Agenda Player, which sadly went defunct, but it kind of got resurrected in the new noagendashow.net site, is the ability to mark chapters. And the audience will do that. And I think that that's incredibly valuable. And there's some culture around it, but as you point out, there's just not enough tools. But I would say, as a content producer, as a podcaster, I would happily pay for that. I would happily pay for a community tool that spits out a URL that is known, obviously, so I can put it into my feed before it actually exists, and have the ability for my listeners, who I happen to call producers, but any listeners, to add the chapter markers. That's worth money. That's a great tool. Now, I like Hypercatcher's model because it's kind of a two-way street where, in order to use the studio, your audience must use the Hypercatcher app. So that's kind of promoting the app at the same time, which I think is a super smart model. But in general, if there were just a service that any app could tie into that produces a JSON URL for chapters, so it by itself has an API, I'd pay for that. Now, I pay for hosting.
You know,
I pay for the transcripts. I'd pay for that. It's a pretty simple service, I think.
Well, it reminds me of sort of the HI stuff that Sphinx was doing around trying to find duplicates and fraud feeds. You know, if there were a service like that where you could, you know, pay almost like a Mechanical Turk type thing where you could pay a fee and then people get paid with Lightning payments or, you know, some small transactions in order to get in there and create the chapters and that sort of thing. That would be a great paid service because it's really hard. Like, you can't do it without HI. I mean, you really, there's just not a way to do any of this stuff without a person doing it. But if you have, you know, a 3.5 hour show, I mean, having the podcaster themselves go through and just spend, I mean, you got to at least listen to all 3.5 hours and you're going to be stopping because you got to write, you know, you got to write down stuff blah, blah, blah.
But the proof is in the pudding. Go look at SoundCloud. Go look at the popularity of people posting comments in the timeline that on SoundCloud, it's, you literally see a waveform. This is hugely popular. This is a very obvious feature that people love, and the ability to be able to use this between apps, so that you should be able to author this on Hypercatcher, but you should also be able to contribute from Podfriend or Podverse or any Podbean, all of the podcast apps. That would have to go through some kind of service.
Yeah.
Which I think is now, Dave, between you and I, Podcast Index LLC can choose to create this service, but I feel that's something that's outside of the scope and we should probably, consider, as an extra, that just it, an extra service.
Yeah. And that's something that I think is good to bring up because it's been talked about before. People have mentioned, such and such thing. Maybe Podcast Index could do that. And that's territory where we tread very lightly.
Yeah, because we really don't want to host accounts, I don't think.
And we don't want to compete with anybody.
Exactly.
I mean, like I don't mind competition for us. I mean, I think that's great. Like, somebody was posting about the Listen Notes API, and that's a paid service. I think it's like $100 a month.
Haven't they been around for a while, those guys?
I think so. Yeah, a few years. I think.
Now, do they support the new namespace?
No, I don't know. Okay. I really don't know, and I don't know personally anybody at that group. And I would hope if they are aware of what's going on over here, they would join the podcastindex.social because there's really no, I mean, we're a free service. We just go on donations. There's really, I mean, technically it's competition, but it's really not because, I mean, we do what we do and our goals are different. I mean, our goals are.
Agreed. They don't necessarily appear to be something that is catering to independent podcast app developers, really. Seems like it's more corporate who want, some kind of access to this for planning purposes. I could be wrong, but that was my first impression.
Well, yeah. And I think also just the core philosophy of, I think if I'm not mistaken, their real core is, taking notes. Essentially writing up notes on a podcast sharing those things. So, whereas ours is preserving podcasting as a platform for free speech. I mean, that's our core mission is to make sure that podcasting remains an open platform that's not censorable. And, so that's why we're doing Lightning payments and all this kind of jazz. We're going in these different directions, and the API and the index is just something that's necessary to make all that happen, because you need a place where you can be sure that a show is not going to get deplatformed, and you need a group that's concentrating on making sure freedom is front and center. And that's what we're trying to do. And that's why we don't charge for anything, because we started paying for this thing out of our own pocket anyway. We were like, we didn't know if we were going to get any donations.
Right.
So I think it's just a different philosophy, but I would love to work with them and anybody else, because the namespace helps everybody. I mean, it's not just going to help, Podcast Index. I mean, it really doesn't help us. It helps our mission. It doesn't help necessarily us, but it will help all of podcasting in general to go. I mean, and that's, well, we could talk about that. Phase one, you know, phase one closed Monday or Sunday. So we have those, you know, five new tags.
Okay, let's just list those five tags just so we have them.
Yeah, and that's
so we have. I don't want to put them in the show notes. Log tag, chapters,
transcripts.
Is that transcript / captions? Is that how we?
Well, it's locked. It's transcript. No S on the end. Let me. I'm getting attacked by the fire department.
That's okay. Transcript captions. Does that have an S?
No. Captions is part of the transcript.
Okay. Tag. So it's just trans. But I like to say /
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going outside of scope.
Okay.
Then we have
funding.
Funding, right? Which I've seen work is really nice. Again,
good,
PodFriend is my go-to for that. Boom. Up pops the PayPal button, but although it's yellow, not red, but okay. Don't we have something like that? Damn, I missed that on the closing of the namespace. It should have been color equals.
It should be demanded in the namespace.
Yes, exactly.
This is not optional.
It's not
this
optional. It has to, all right, funding, and then we have
chapters.
We have that clip.
Okay. And a soundbite.
Soundbite's what we're calling it. Yeah. All right. Sound. Yeah. Is that with an I or a Y?
With an I.
Okay.
Yeah. Soundbite with a Y.
You'd be amazed. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So those five, and those are locked down.
Yeah.
And I think almost every one of those is supported by almost everybody. One or two are missed. I think the soundbite may be trailing.
Yeah, a little bit, but you know, and it's not as much as I thought it would be, though. I mean, there's actually people are putting that in fairly quickly.
I have tool issue once again
with soundbite.
Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah,
that's the tool. The tools are lagging on soundbite more than the players are.
Yes. And yeah, I have no idea. Can I calculate this by hand? What I need to enter or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you can put it. You can just look at the time code. It's just like. Just like chapters, it's done with seconds. It's just an offset and a duration. So you say this soundbite is going to be, it's going to start at this many seconds in the enclosure, mm-hmm. and it's going to last for this many seconds. And so the app just knows, you know, jump here, play this much content, and then jump out.
And the numerator is seconds.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right. Well, I can do that.
Yeah, no, that's an easy one if you needed to drop back to doing something by hand. But we shipped that, and phase two is now just in an open status. There's no close date on it or anything. We're just going to have to, especially with the holidays and that kind of thing, I don't feel real comfortable just putting a hard date on anything right now until after the holidays are over. But what we're going to be focusing on, I think, is the person tag, the location tag, and the season tag.
Okay, so person tag, season tag, and
the location tag.
And what about value?
Well, it's in there. I mean, that one's just sort of a.
I'm putting it on my list.
Who knows how long it's going to take for other people. We got to have a host in order for namespace tag adoption. You got to have the rules are you got to have at least one host that'll support it and at least one app that'll support it. Sphinx supports on the app side, but,
well, how about Castapod?
I don't think Castapod, well, they're not a host.
Well,
they're self-hosting.
Well, they're self-hosting. Be very careful what you say there. I hear a Castapod guy sharpening up his pitchfork.
Yeah, he's gonna come after me on social media.
Who the hell do you think you are, Dave Jones?
You piece of shit.
Gonna come after you on social media.
Yeah.
He's gonna cancel you on the Mastodon, bro. You're out.
Can I just say that, so Jay, I have to get into the Twitter account. the podcastindex.org Twitter account.
Yes, my wife was asking about that. Hey, who runs the Podcast Index Twitter account?
Staff runs it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Dave's got a guy that does it.
We might have to relinquish control to her. She can't stand the way we do this.
Oh, really?
Well, she's still irked that we couldn't figure out that the donation button had to be red. So,
okay.
Hey, it's a free marketing department. If she wants to do it, I'm all in.
Hey, she can have it, man.
Yeah, right? That is
one less thing I had.
Right?
My life would be wonderful if I never had to check Twitter again. That's what I was starting to say. Like, I got on there to, I don't even know what I was posting, but I got on there and James Cridlin had posted, so it popped up in on the top of the timeline. It said, he said, oh, you know, I haven't gotten into my Twitter account in months. And so I'm sorry if I missed everybody. And then he was like, see y'all later. Like, basically I'm leaving again. I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to do my every 6 months check-in. And it got me thinking, and this is completely off topic, but it just got me thinking social media, honestly, I'm beginning more and more every day to think it has ruined society.
Human beings.
Yes.
Of course it has.
It is an awful, steaming pile, dumpster fire, whatever. It's awful. And I don't know why this brought, I just came to mind, but I mean, it's just, I deleted Twitter off my phone probably a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. I don't miss it one bit.
I mean, I use Twitter only as an inbox. So I'm only looking at my mentions because that's where the most interesting things are, is what, you know, people will tag me in. And that's really all I use it for. But to me, I get great pleasure from going to a Mastodon server and I look at, you know, there's the three areas, your subscriptions, your timeline, your mentions, and then whatever else is happening on your local Mastodon server. And I go down 1, 2, 3. Okay, I've seen them all. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, I've seen reply here. Okay. And all right, I'm done. There's nothing else popping up. Yeah. It's not holding back any posts to show me just as I'm ready to leave, which is definitely what the algorithms do on most social networks. You know, it'll notify you, oh, you've got 5 likes just when you're, you know, when you've been on for, you know, for 5 minutes. All this, they hold that stuff back. It's crazy.
And it's the hate. It's the hate, too.
Well, they program that for you, the hate.
Yeah, like, it's, you, people's, I don't know what it is, but it's like, okay, so we started this social media experiment, 12 years ago?
2008.
Okay.
Yeah.
So 12 years ago, roughly, is when social media sort of rose into a prominent thing in culture. Okay, so we now know, like, sociologically speaking, that it takes 12 years to destroy society with social with social media. I mean, like, that's really how long? Because I would love for somebody to do an analysis and say, and like, look at the waves that happened during the social media experiment of 2008 to 2020. Where, you know, everybody joined, then everybody, you know, thought it was great. Then certain groups started beginning to be deplatformed. Other groups began to do canceling. And it's like, you just see this shifting monster that the thing became. And I guess it's been on my mind just because I saw, Steve Bannon, the War Room got deplatformed.
Mm-hmm.
That podcast, it got deplatformed off Spotify. And, you know, I started looking around cause I was thinking, well, I mean, you know, we talk about deplatforming. That's one of the missions of the index, is to preserve free speech. And so I'm like, well, maybe I can, go listen and see what he said to get himself deplatformed. And I couldn't find it.
Oh, like, I can tell you exactly what he did.
Well, there's no clip anywhere. It's like he's been so deplatformed that you can't even find. I mean, like, well, I say there's no clip. I mean, I could have listened to. I don't know what the War Room.
Okay,
does, but they've got like 50 episodes a day.
Yeah, no, like, I understand what you're saying. In other words, even the offending words that he had uttered had also been pushed down, removed, taken away. You can't even find it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah. The only way to find a clip would have been to listen to every episode that, within a certain time range.
Right.
And the guy evidently has no other job but that. So he's putting out like 20 hours of content a day. And I can't, I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
I was looking for like somebody clipped it where you could listen to what he said to try to get a context of it.
And you know, if I had the soundbite tag at my discretion, I could actually play. Couldn't I also insert a separate URL from a different MP3 with a time code and a length in my own feed?
Not for the soundbite. No, it's only like a soundbite of the enclosure, the main enclosure.
Because it's a relative value?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I got you. Yeah. Well, I can tell you what he said, just out of interest.
Okay.
He was talking about Fauci.
Can you say it when the Steve Bannon voice? So that I feel like I'm there?
Gosh, I've never really done a Bannon voice, but it's a...
I don't even know how you would do it.
I don't think I can do it. I'd have to hear him. I'd have to hear him. I can't do it, but... You know,
I'll just pretend that you look like him.
Oh, God. And Fauci, I tell you, Fauci, we got to get his head on a stick. His head on a stick is what happened to Fauci. So it was that. You know, it's like, please.
Steve, you can't say that.
Yeah. Oh, please. So that became, he literally threatened to cut off people's heads. That was the accusation, but he didn't really threaten that. You know, it's hyperbole.
Is there no sense of like, I forgot who said it, but somebody a while back I heard referred to social media as the literal web, and that's what this is like. It's the literal web. It's like people who don't understand metaphor, they nuance, don't understand jokes,
irony.
Yeah, either willfully or
unfortunately, we are way off topic, but unfortunately, I think this is. No, not at all. It's a big reason of why we're doing this. It's, in this case, that's most likely politically motivated. He, you know, he was a big part of Trump's first team. And, you know, obviously he's the guy who has been touting the laptop from hell, Hunter Biden's laptop. And so it's political. And once it's political, then it's very easy for huge power forces to come into work, mainly advertisers and corporations that just don't want any of that around. You know, it's easy. Yeah. And they have huge swinging ding dongs, as it were, to, you know, full of money that they can, pull away from a company or, you know, whatever to get what they feel is righteous. So, and that's all fine, but it really has nothing to do with anything, you know, I don't know.
Okay, this is why this came up in my mind. Well, I have a hatred of social media anyway. It's just a common rant with me. But one of the reasons it popped into my mind was that I saw the Pod News newsletter, I think from this morning, maybe yesterday morning. And the first little item was, the podcast listening habits of 13 to 34 year olds have been highlighted by blah, blah, blah. And I started thinking to myself, you know, I have three kids, a 19 year old, a 17 year old, and a 10 year old. And I was like, none of them listen to podcasts and none of their friends listen to podcasts.
Really?
And I started thinking, you know, I don't know a single person younger than 25 that listens to podcasts. And it started making me think, is there a cliff? Is there like a podcast age cliff that's coming? I don't know anybody this young. And I actually know quite a few young people because my kids have friends and go to school and all that stuff. None of them listen to podcasts.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is weird.
Well, I don't know what to say about that because I just don't know the numbers. You know, when we talk about Gen Z or the Zoomers on No Agenda, we get a lot of notes from 23, 24-year-olds. So they're definitely listening, but it's the curve probably doesn't start until after mid-20s, You're probably right.
Yeah, I bet it's real. I bet the listenership of 25 and under is pretty small.
Which makes it so interesting how podcasting is such a desirable audience, such an engaged audience, an audience that can be quote unquote activated to do many, many things. Really an advertiser's dream, the relationship between a podcaster and a podcast audience. But the exact nature of the decentralized system that we built and have been using is the entire reason why it is actually incompatible with advertising, with online advertising, because there's zero effective, true way to measure listenership. Downloads does not equal listenership. And I've actually, as I've been doing a little more investigating myself into the evolution of hosting companies and ad technology, there's a lot of tracking going on in podcasting that I was unaware of.
It's really as bad as email.
And they don't call it tracking. They call it attribution. Okay. It's a cool little attribution, which is another word for we know who you are, fucker. Attribution.
Did you see the other thing that was about, let's see if I can find it here. It was basically, there's some company out there that has, and I'm sure this is nothing new, but they've like mapped out all the IP space and they're doing associations between, here it is. Tapad, T-A-P-A-D. It says Experian has bought Tapad for $280 million. PodSites describes them this way. A number of providers have sprung up in the last decade offering massive databases of every household IP mapped to identifiers they have seen at that IP.
Oh, sure. That doesn't surprise me.
I'm sure that's not new, but I bet you there's so much content to do associations now.
That,
like, the IPv4 space is small enough now. We used to think 4 billion addresses. It's like, oh my God, you can't, you know, that's too much. You can't do anything with that. Well, I mean, the 4 billion, I mean, you can scan the whole internet with a tool like MassScan in like an hour and a half. So, I mean, I bet you.
I remember the days when we had an actual printed yellow pages of the internet. I still have a copy.
Shut up, Grandpa.
Yo!
No, I just think that there's going to be a time when, they don't even need all these tricks anymore. Like the tracking pixels and the emails and, you know, all these kinds of stuff. It's like, well, we know that you downloaded it from this IP, so we already know who you are. So whatever.
Yeah. I was just surprised and it gave me even more insight into the incredible challenge Spotify has taken on, and, you know, all power to them, but I'm real happy over here. I think we're doing some fun stuff and with a really fun group of people. You were talking about the hosting companies, and obviously we need hosting companies to adopt these tags. Although I think Buzzsprout is pretty far, right? They have, did they incorporate Soundbite yet? Cause I think they have everything.
Oh yeah. They've got everything. The only piece that they're missing really is on the chapter side, they need to add image URLs, but tool. But yeah. No, I think they support everything.
Fantastic.
And it's interesting because, if you want to get into that, the let's see, let me pull up my notes here. Did you get that clip that I sent?
Yeah, I did.
Play it.
There's too many podcasts.
Yeah, that was from yesterday. Dvorak telling me how many podcasts there were. I'm like, no, nah, you're not exactly right, bro.
Okay, so I've been wondering for a while how many some of these hosting statistics, and I can say this because you mentioned Buzzsprout. If you look, so in the index, the based purely on number of feeds, the ranking goes like this: Anchor, obviously number one. We have them at 640,000, roughly. feeds. SoundCloud, 101,000. Buzzsprout is number three at 56,557. Libsyn, 55,000. Podbean, 51,000. And Spreaker, 50,000. Mm-hmm. So that's how we have them listed. And I know we're missing feeds, but that's the way we have them listed. And that seems to match up with what everybody else mm-hmm. is showing as well. But the interesting thing to me is if you look at how many podcasts have published in the last 90 days, and that's specifically on Anchor side. Mm-hmm. It's like 25%.
Oh yeah. It's very low. Feeds. Very low. Yeah. Yeah.
And that tells me that, you know, just size doesn't really get you.
Doesn't get you the reach. Exactly. It's not the size of the ocean. It's the motion.
Let me send you. And that's funny too. Cause let me send you this email. I looked up, I was like, well, what does the internet say are the biggest, podcast hosts? And so I just did a search for in Google, and I sent you that email. And I just typed in to Google biggest podcast hosts, and it's funny what it brought back. I sent you a screenshot.
I'm looking for it.
I think just pure, you know, pure size. I don't think that's.
Google gave you that, so yes. What your search was. Biggest podcast hosts, and yes, the first link is the 31 best podcast hosting platforms, but above that is a strip of pictures of podcasters with myself at the first pole position with 6'5". Then comes is it W. Kamau Bell at 6'4". Scott Aukerman comes in close behind at 6'3". Steven Crowder at 6'2". Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the Podfather, not only the prototype podcaster, he is the tallest podcaster of them all.
Yeah, and the title of that is Podcast Broadcasters by Height.
That's nuts.
And I didn't realize Ira Glass was as tall as he was. He's bringing up he's bringing up the NPR love. I mean, you got 3 inches on him, but you know.
Many jokes I could make. We won't. We will not.
Anyway, I thought that was interesting because for one reason, because Buzzsprout just passed Libsyn as far as number of feeds, but I still got some. I still got some verification of these numbers to do and to make sure that they're accurate before I just start publishing anything. But I think just looking through preliminary, it's interesting to see how many feeds these hosting companies have versus how many are actively being published.
Right. Right.
And there's some clear patterns here. And even though, And I think it's probably got to do with free also. Right. I mean, because Anchor's free, and there's no barrier to entry, so you're just going to pop on there, do a show, and when something's free, you don't care that much about it.
You know? But what's the forces that will take place now, and I'm going to start. I would say on Sunday's No Agenda, I want to get an okay from David. I want to solicit people to get Hypercatcher and use it to create chapters. I'd love to point to other community-based systems as well, obviously. But what's going to happen, there's going to be a pull from podcasters who want these features. And the more apps that have this, the higher the demand will be. And so if you're in the hosting business, if you need any help, let us know, because it's going to come real fast. And I'm already seeing people saying, well, how do I move my feed? Because I want to go to somewhere where they actually have everything that works with this new stuff.
Yeah, I've gotten notes from quite a few people this week that are wondering how to put this stuff in. And I think PowerPress will help a lot. Because there's way more people out there that are self-hosting on.
Is PowerPress implementing the tags?
Yeah, they're cool. that's part of Blueberry.
Oh, okay, so, good.
Yeah, and I think there's just a lot more of those than I thought there were of people self-hosting on WordPress.
I can see why. Yeah, it's an easy way to do it.
and you retain your branding and your content and all that kind of stuff. It just makes sense, you know. But I think that'll be a big deal because there's a lot of those people as well. Anyway, that's I think for phase two, as far as bringing it back to the namespace, I would like to focus on those tags, really. I mean, I'm not running this show. Anybody can take it in a different direction. But I think I was disappointed not to get the person tag into phase one. So really, I mean, if nothing else, I want to get that tag and the location tag into phase two, because I just think they're really important.
What is the what was the problem with the person tag not making it in?
Well, it just got too complicated, because the other tags that were in phase one were sort of, I don't want to call them low hanging fruit, but they were fairly technically simple.
Mm-hmm.
Person and location are technically challenging because you can't put, you're talking about attribution of, you know, who a person is, their role within the podcast, guest host, cast. So, I mean, we're talking about other things.
It's the subcategories beyond host and guest.
Yeah. Like, so there's the podcast taxonomy project is part of it. There's a couple guys at Podchaser that are integral to that, and they've been they've been in the namespace GitHub, kind of sort of helping with their input on that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got a whole list of basically cast.
So this is names. Almost like a categories issue again.
Yeah, it kind of is, but they've already mapped a lot of that out, and supposedly they're going to have a draft document like within a few days. And so then if we can have something stable there that says, you know, producer, sound engineer, blah, blah, you know, all these cast names, then we could
that's really credits.
Credits. That's what I keep saying cast. I mean credits.
Credits. Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
A way to credit. And so, like, 99% of people will just use guest or host.
So here's where it gets interesting, and I recall this from 16 years ago. There was a huge push in the original RSS 2.0 spec to include a show notes tag, which was never adopted, excluded, and that was always understood to be a part of a namespace. And I think maybe that ship has sailed because it's so well understood that now goes in the description field. But it's interesting that no one, of all the jihadism I saw 16 years ago, no one has really made a stand for show notes.
You know, it's one of those that I'm personally conflicted on, because I know what seems like an obvious solution would be have a show notes tag and just have it be either a link to the show notes or have that be in the content. But then if it's in the content, it's really no different than description. So if you have, but then if it's not in the content, that's yet another file that the app has to download and deal with. And I don't know. I just keep going back and forth.
Well, the only reason I bring it up is because when we look at this person tag and it's expanded into credits, that's a large part of what I paste into the description field. I don't put actual show notes in there because my show notes would make each entry about 8 megs.
Yeah, they would.
I used to do that way, way back in the beginning, but then it just became so much. There's just so many articles, etc. It just was crazy.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bother me one way or the other. I understand that ultimately this is for, you know, to be able to search. I guess it's like IMDb. You know, at a certain point, what is the importance of knowing who the sound engineer was? If that's something you really want to drill down to, I'm just not sure that all that information needs to be in there. But on the other hand, I really like it looking toward the future. And this is something that came up. I went to the Austin Bitcoin meetup last night.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Moving toward the future, if you have those credits could be easily used for value splits.
Yeah. Okay.
And that is something that a lot of people are thinking about. They're thinking about it in in many ways, and it makes so much sense if you have this list of people who help put the show together, that you split up any value payments amongst those people and whatever the appropriate percentages are. Then you have kind of a nice reference.
Just without the value part necessarily, just asking this as a straight question, if you had a tag, a person tag that you could label as producer, executive producer, would you stick those in your feed? As tags instead of just in the show notes?
Sure, I would. I mean, I don't see the benefit, but I would, sure. I mean, if there was a real... it's a philosophical question. I do kind of like it. But to me, that's not the person tag is a misnomer. It should be a credits tag. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Because then you could... Persons are persons, but I think it's easier if you have here's the list of titles of credits. It's hard, man. There's Hollywood lists that are, it's very tight. I mean, Hollywood, they know exactly what the titles are and where they appear on the credit roll and what's font size in relation to the others. And, do they get a single screen with their name, or can they be listed with five others? I mean, this has been hashed out over years and years of fighting to get that done. So there's prior art, but I just don't know if we should be dragging prior art into the new era.
Well, I think that's what the taxonomy project is trying to establish. And I think what we're trying to do with the person tag, or actually I like credit tag better. I may propose a name change, but I think what we're trying to do there is not necessarily make it anything required where you have to just get specific with all this kind of jazz. You know, like 99% of the time, you're just probably going to end up putting host, and that'll be fine.
Right.
But also make it flexible enough to where if somebody wanted to go crazy with it and try to do, fit, their entire, credit role in the episode, they could.
But also, using person is also xenophobic. Why couldn't an alien, a person's not an alien or an animal. It's xenophobic and hereby not supported. It has to be a credit.
I vote we cancel.
We cancel persons.
Done. Persons are canceled. Yeah. They're now credits.
Okay. All right. So I like credit better personally, but that's something that, anyway, that's what this is for. This show is here to discuss. So I'm sure this will get picked up on the Mastodon.
Do you want to thank some credits? Some persons?
I just want to finish the phase two tags, and then I'd love to thank some persons.
Okay.
Because the next one was season, and I wanted to make a point about this. We have, I think it's Stacy from NPR. She's been on the GitHub, namespace, looking into season, something they've always wanted to do. They haven't really gotten any support from any apps. And, I think that they're their own publisher, right? They have their own system. They have their own, publishing system.
As far as I can tell from the generator tag, it looks like they post their own stuff. Yeah.
So here's a tremendous opportunity for app developers. Let's get on this season. Let's implement this season. Let's make it look really nice for whatever whatever NPR's needs are. I personally don't see the season for me, but I totally understand how that fits with NPR. And what a great opportunity! Just saying. Yeah,
and the basis of what they want is a very simple change, and this here again, this gets into another competing philosophical idea with the namespace is, well, there's already, a season tag. iTunes name in the iTunes namespace, but the it doesn't meet their needs.
Why doesn't? Do you know why?
Because it does not support text.
It's only numbers.
It's just a number. You can only have season one, season two, season three, type of deal. And the what they want is a textual
season name. Free form. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, they want to have season one not show up as season one. They want to be able to name it where it's like
the Bush years.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
The Obama regime.
Yeah.
The Trump tragedy.
The dark
winter. The dark winter.
Yeah, exactly. It's a simple change. Just add a text attribute in there and you're done. But, you know, if you just look at it from, oh, you're just duplicating the iTunes namespace, and you said you weren't going to do that. Uh-huh. You said don't duplicate existing art. Well, there's a few, there's a few different ways in which you have to do that. It's not duplication if it's not the same thing.
It's correcting.
That's right.
It's just correcting a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. If it's not meeting people's needs, you duplicate it and you fix it. You
know? And from a technological standpoint, although I'm sure that people have back-end systems, depending on the numerology version, there's no technical reason to not just accept any other characters, right?
Yeah. There's no challenge to that. I mean, that's a simple thing. Right. And really here's the way it should go. Apple should just say, okay, we'll dump all of the iTunes tags into the namespace, into the podcast namespace. We change it up and modify them however we need to. And then let the whole world know that they just need to change from iTunes colon to podcast colon, and we're done.
Yep.
Not pie in the sky, is it?
No. Well, we'll see. We'll see. They're not asleep over there at Apple, but I think they're very focused on, I have a feeling they're pretty focused on creating what you would call Podcast Plus. I think they're going to do some kind of offering like that.
Well, I think they have to.
I don't think they have to at all. I think they're foolish. No. But that's,
well, I think they have to from a business standpoint. I mean, you can't, if Spotify's doing it, that's their main competitor. They're just like, well, I think.
So was that the same logic that took away the escape key from their MacBook Pro? I mean, is that how they were thinking, that they made those decisions through the same logic tree? It pissed off every developer I know.
Why do they still have the touch bar? It's an obvious failure. It's so bad.
But it's such, I mean, the escape key, being a command line guy myself, is like a tactile piece of goodness that's on your keyboard. You know where it is.
You don't have to look for it. You know
exactly where you put your finger, so you don't touch. If you have a touch screen, you know, it's like, ooh, I don't want to go too far.
Yeah.
But it's that thing that's just there. It's like a part of life. That was a huge mistake in my mind.
That's one of those things in the nature of big companies where, there's something happens and it got done and it got pushed through the system. And then somebody looks at the top when it gets time to actually like PR it and promo it. And they're like, whoa, wait, we did this? Why did we do this?
And that's why it's so nice to have users and developers working together on this project. I know I'm one of the few users, but there are more. There are more. There are definitely more. We got a whole host of Buzzsprout feeds that are coming online with this. So then we have the location tag, which I see several use cases for. I see a nightmarish situation developing around what system to use for the values.
Well, that's been where most of the, debate has been around is what... How do you represent it? And that's what I think we always knew that was going to be one of the most technically challenging tags, because, everybody, part of what makes it challenging is everybody's got an opinion. The other part of what makes it a challenge is that a lot of those opinions are legit. And when you have four or five different opinions on how to do something and none of them are obviously wrong, well, then you just got to pick one and hope for the best. But, a lot of it's going to revolve around latitude, longitude specifications.
Right.
And here's what, and this is another thing that that is common with all these sorts of like standards development type work is you end up spending most of your time debating about stuff that 99% of people are not going to use, you know, because like there's maybe, well, I say not use it. I mean, they may not even use the location tag at all, but then they also, if they do use the location tag, they're probably just going to use it in its most basic form.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up, you got to design where that basic form, that core, that root thing that it does is dead simple. It's dead simple to create and dead simple to consume, because you don't want this stuff to be so complicated that people can't. I would say this. Okay. RSS is XML. It's a markup language. You don't want this stuff to be so complicated that you can't write it by hand.
Right. Which it technically really already is.
It kind of is, yeah. But the spirit of it needs to be such that you could write it by hand if you needed to. That doesn't mean that anybody's going to do it. That well, just means that that's what it's supposed to be.
I'll throw my hat into the ring.
Okay.
On location. And I can see reasons to... If I were to use a location tag, I would probably use something that showed me as being probably near downtown Austin. So if anyone wanted to find out what podcasts are produced in Austin, I would not put my actual location. But what I find as a creator that can be done pretty much everywhere, and I know that my phone understands this. I know that I can put it into Google Maps and it understands this. And I have right in front of me on the Freedom controller, which is always, I get a big kick out of this. I have my IP address shows up, and I click on that, and it shows me my zip code. It shows me my city. It shows me my latitude and longitude. And I think if I chop off 6 digits off of those numbers, then I think that would make the resolution fuzzy enough so that you can't pinpoint me exactly. But it's right there. It's very easy for me to retrieve my actual latitude and longitude. And I could do that with my phone. Anybody can retrieve that information quite simply. I think you could probably even do it in a Google search if you have your location services turned on. So yeah, that seems like a super easy way for anybody. Now, which also the reverse is true, that you can, as a hosting company, you can say, give me a zip code and address, and I'll pin it to that. And I'll just enter the latitude and longitude. There's a million services that do that.
The most recent sort of, not debate, but the most recent back and forth on that has been whether or not to require a location, like a string, whether or not to say, like U.S., like a locality and a country code. Because initially we had it where location was a locality and a country code, and then locality or country and or country code, and then latitude longitude was also an optional spec that you could put in and say if you wanted to get more specific.
I'm okay with that.
But then some people were like, well, should it just be latitude longitude? Because you can just make it, may be more complicated to do it the other way, and latitude longitude can give you most of what you need at the resolution that you want. So it just goes back and forth. And
I'm sure you will make a wise decision, Dave.
I hope it's not me that has to make that decision. I hope it's somebody else, because I don't want it. I don't want that. But I do think it's a great idea, because it would help you. And I can tell you, I can show you exactly why it's a great idea. Somebody emailed me, the guy from Kazakhstan that we talked about that did a $10 mm-hmm. donation last week.
Yep.
He's wanting to build a Kazakhstan podcast search engine.
Mm-hmm.
And we've emailed about it. And he's like, but you know, the languages could either be Kazakhstan, Kazakhstani, or Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't just limit it to language.
No.
And you can't limit it to just a .kz domain. Because
don't you just enter, just enter caliphate and it pops up?
Yeah. This the .cp extension, TLD. But you can't, like, you just dot oil is what it is.
Can't you just follow Hunter Biden and then you're led right to Kazakhstan? I don't understand the problem.
Yeah, you get if you please don't do that. Don't Google that. You'll end up black bagged.
Yeah,
but there's your thing. Like you can't. There's nothing to key on that tells you anything. So, but if you had the location tag, you could just easily say, okay, well, all of these podcasts originate from Kazakhstan. And it doesn't have to give you your street address. I mean, it could just be Kazakhstan, the whole country, you know?
Yeah. I think just the simplest known systems, you know, it's like, yeah, I think city, state, country, and then longitude, latitude, make it optional, whatever you want to pick. It's all optional, I presume. And you can pick and choose whatever you want. If you want to be included in the Kazakhstani index, then you have to enter your country code appropriately.
Yeah.
So it seems like we can do a couple options there. It doesn't have to be either or.
I mean, I think we're most of the way there on location and person/credit. We just got to get that last mile.
Well, I'm glad he's doing something, because there's a lot of people that pop up and say, oh, I'd love this, you know, and what that means is I'd love for someone out there to create an app that does that, utilizing this that doesn't exist yet. And so,
that's the old church thing.
that's my job here.
when somebody goes up to the pastor and is like, hey, I really wish that there was this, that there was this ministry in the church. And, you know, the pastor is like, great, go ahead and do it. And they're like, oh, wait, what?
Yeah,
I didn't mean me.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's where we're at.
Okay.
I mean, I think we can get it done. I don't see why we can't get.
I don't see why we couldn't either. And then we have my favorite, of course, the value block.
Yep.
Now, what are the discussions around the value block? Because it seems pretty straightforward.
I don't think there's really any discussion about it. I mean, Brian of London, he's trying to work to get it adapted to other coins. Hive or
does he need any changes for that, or is he
if he does he hadn't shared it.
Okay.
But I mean, I think it's fairly straightforward. I mean, there's really not a whole lot of stuff you can change there.
So I discussed all this yesterday at the last night at the Austin Bitcoin meetup, which I was invited by Ryan Gentry, who is the I don't want to get his title wrong, I think he's Vice President or Senior Vice President of Business Development at Lightning Labs. And it was kind of funky because it was this place on East 5th Street, which is, you know, downtown Austin with the original lockdowns. And then we did have a couple BLM marches, which got a little messy the first time around. There's more graffiti and just destruction of property.
One dude got shot, right? Didn't a guy get
killed? There are two things that, as a side note, in Austin, two things that are interesting. One is, you know, there was a Black Lives Matter rally, and one of the protesters had a AR-15, and they did what you've probably seen on the news. They surrounded a car, and the guy with the AR-15 walked up to the person's window, raised his barrel. And he did it to the wrong person. And the guy in the car, I think he's off duty or active military. He said, no way, he fired. And he called the police right away. And, it was self-defense. And that stopped all the bull crap in Austin. And the horses, which I thought was really cute. There was a smaller group, and they were trying to raise a ruckus, and they were blocking off the street. And then the Austin PD came in, the mounted police. What it does to a lot of these 20-year-old kids is it's a brain freeze, because they look at the horse and they're like, well, but that's animal cruelty. And then all of a sudden this 2,500-pound beast comes over and starts pushing you along, and you will respond very well to this horse. If you've ever been next to a riot horse,
that is interesting.
You have no idea. They are badass. And I grew up in the 70s in the Netherlands, where there was a lot of anarchist riots. And man, when they brought in the horses, people disperse. That don't want to mess with the horses.
I never thought about that, having an animal versus some sort of technological,
These horses are not animals, man. They're tanks. These things are crazy. So anyway, so it was this boarded up part of East 5th Street, which is downtown, dark, no lights at all. And I'm like, you know what's going to happen. This is the perfect scam. Come to my Bitcoin meetup. I'm going to get shivved here on 5th Street and, bleed out on the sidewalk.
They're going to steal your public key.
Give me your key, bitch. So, that's funny. Ryan found me. I think it was at Unchained Capital, which is a multi-sig blockchain company. So they're working on multiple signatures for releasing. And these are all Bitcoin, or mainly, I would say, Bitcoin developers. There's about 20, 25 of them. And
I heard an interview with the Unchained Capital guys on, I forgot whose podcast that was.
Probably TFTC.
Some other one, but they were, seemed like pretty cool guys. They got an interesting business model.
Yeah. Well, it was all super nice, very, very smart people. And, so I got a little introduction. I went through, I've got down to 20 minutes now. I can pitch all the way up to the value for value lightning payments for starting 16 years ago. And so that worked pretty well. A lot of interest. I think there was some brain freezing going on because the nature of Bitcoin developers is to have absolute security. You can't be sending something, like it's in your wallet. And if, you don't have a explicit reason for a payment. Like, there was a lot of security based stuff.
Yeah. You're going to put what in an RSS feed?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But there was also a lot of, holy crap, that's a very cool way to do it. And it appears that our multi-payment concept has really sparked some actual development in the Lightning protocols to enable that in a little more, native fashion.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Yeah, which I'm sure will be backwards compatible into what we're doing, but it was nice to hear that. So after my 20 minutes, then they started just presenting stuff about Lightning and Bitcoin, and holy crap, these guys are deep.
They're on a different level, right?
Well, let me see. So if you have your UXTOs and those are ready to go, but you want to put it into the pool so that you can it's like, whoa.
You just checked out, didn't you? You started looking at your phone.
And everyone's like, yeah, I'm really excited about Taproot. And I'm like in the corner there, Google Taproot. Let's see, what is Taproot? So they're working on a lot of the core of Bitcoin, but it was nice to meet everybody. Amazing to meet two people in the same room in Texas whose first name is Parker. I didn't think that was possible. And both of them looked like Parkers. They were great. It's like, you're Parker. You're both Parker. Okay. Then we went out to get a little barbecue and chatted with Ryan a bit more. And it was very interesting to see Ryan actually promoting what we're doing more than I am. And he was going around showing everybody the tribes on Sphinx chat. And he said, look, funny. Here's how the sats flow in. And it was just like, whoa, hey, we need to send him a box of candies once in a while. He was really, really pitching hard. Well, he also told me that it's most likely at this moment, not by value amount, but by transaction amount, that we, our little group here with, six podcasts, seven podcasts that are now value block enabled, that we're probably responsible for the majority of Lightning payments on the network today.
Are you kidding?
Yeah,
me?
I know. Yes.
So that's what I told somebody in the TFTC tribe the other day. I was like, well, it may have been yesterday, somebody was talking about how some kind of use case this is like going to be the perfect use case, this other thing. I'm like, well, to me, podcasting is the perfect use case for Lightning payments. I mean, like, if what's needed is to drive traffic onto the Lightning Network, I mean, like, it's done.
Exactly.
We just did it.
Exactly.
I mean, I can't imagine that. And I think I had asked this question once before. Let's just say that you get 150 podcasts that are sending Lightning payments. Do we know that the Lightning Network can handle that much keysend traffic?
Well, thank you for asking, because this comes down to the HTLCs that go right back to the UXTOs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got okay. That makes perfect sense.
So this brings in another important point. So the way this works is with these nodes, and so for a while we were just using my Raspi Blitz, which is a ready-made package, essentially a Raspberry Pi with all the bits and bobs into it. And it's simple enough for me to set up. We were using that for the index. When you're getting like 10 payments a minute, and those payments come pretty much within each other, within the same time frame, I could see the CPU load go up. And of course, it would have to. So I don't know how that scales. I really don't. At the same time, we have two fantastic developments, and then we should probably circle back into exactly what we need and where we're going with this. Actually, I'll lead into it. At the same time, we have a community of Bitcoin podcasting people coming together. So in this group, we have Sphinx.chat, which is, I'll just say, Paul mainly, but of course Evan, and there's other people who work there, and they're really
Gonzalo.
Right, Gonzalo. They're really doing a great job in the tribes, helping people, supporting people. I think we've all gotten into the habit of once in a while just throwing a boost out there just to get everyone's attention.
Yeah, it's funny how these little standards develop.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The standards are it's cool. You know, the numerology of it all, and so that is
sometimes
working.
I notice that somebody hasn't dropped like somebody hasn't had a new episode in a while. I just go throw a boost at them just to get give them something.
So the system that Sphinx Chat uses. And the way they've built architectured their system is everybody has a node, and provisioning those and getting them up and running and keeping that infrastructure running at scale is something that they're working on and figuring out how to do that in the most efficient way. Also in this group, as I mentioned, is Ryan, and through Paul, maybe Paul and or Ryan, we have Graham. And Graham runs the voltage.io.
Yeah, and I did hear him on TFTC. Yeah.
Right. And so Voltage is literally a node. You start it up. It's not a server you can get into. There's no SSH. There's no way to get into it. It's a very simple control panel. And you access everything from the outside through the API. You can only access it from whitelisted IP addresses. I think there's a lot of security consciousness that's going on there. You can pay in Bitcoin. And so I've set the podcast index node up with him, and it's performing beautifully. It's really doing quite well. Now, these type of services... Hey,
did you set that up as a Neutrino node, like a light node, or the full?
It's a full node.
Because I think they just released the Neutrino nodes recently, like within the last week.
Yeah, I mean, I went for the full on top option because I mm-hmm. didn't know if the other ones included key send or not. So I just I just got that. But I think Graham will be putting together packages for podcasters, for creators who want to participate in the system.
Nice.
And I think that hosting companies should talk to guys like Graham. Because you're going to want to offer this to your customers, and it's probably easier to do a handoff and have a relationship there. I don't know if hosting companies are interested in hosting nodes. That may be a bit much.
Well, you've got the security. You've got the security there too, and you don't have to worry about people winging it.
Yeah,
James Cridlin said on the Mastodon, he was like. And somebody said, well, you should talk about this with the tags and the newsletter and all this stuff. And he's like, I can't talk about this right now. He's like, there's no, like, it's just not far enough along. I mean, like, right. It doesn't even make any sense. He's like, I don't even know what to say. And so, you know, and that, yeah, and right. that's legit. That is perfectly legit because, like, you can't until what you need is a situation like that where you have somebody who can say, you know, here's a node and here's an X, you know, here's your XML, just go stick it in your feed.
Exactly.
Or, you know, here's a handoff to your host and to your hosting provider, and they can stick it in your feed. And then it's like, then you don't have to worry about the implementation details. Right. Then it's all just a matter of how does it work? And so, you can explain that.
So for podcasters who want to get ready, and if you want to get started, I believe, you can do that. If you set up a node with voltage.io and we already have a process in place for Sphinx Chat, but if you go to podcasterwallet.com and claim your feed, or claim your wallet really, and you enter your node ID that you get from Voltage, then and we have a spot right there on the website, right? That you just say you can say either I have Sphinx Chat, which activates the app, or you right. can do a different node, your own node or a Voltage node.
Right.
You do that, and you're basically already set up.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do. I mean, you should, if you can, you should paste the value block into your feed. But if you can't, at least for now, and for the foreseeable future, you're already set up through the apps that communicate with the index.
Yeah, it'll stick it directly in the index. In, you know, if you don't have your feed, like if you don't have the ability to edit your feed, which a lot of people don't. Yeah, so that's the way around it. So you can get your node, Voltage node, or you know, Sphinx node, or whatever set up, and then just paste it in there. If you wanted to do it that way, and that gets around having for now until the value block adoption comes along, that gets around that. It just sticks it directly into the index so that Lightning enabled podcast apps like Sphinx and other ones that come online can see it. Yeah.
And a reminder that all of the code that Sphinx is using is all open source. They post it on the GitHub. You can replicate anything. You can use their app with your node. I mean, this all of that is possible. And in addition to that, Ryan introduced me to Roy from Breeze Wallet. And Breeze is an Israeli company. They have their business model, the way I understand it, is they provide a wallet, a Lightning wallet, which they will also help you convert your fiat to Bitcoin and then put it right into your Lightning wallet, which is a big deal because they can do it end to end. And then when you want to take your money back out and turn it into fiat, they help you with that as well. And so they take care of all of that. It's it is a fully noted wallet, but they do all the channel management and everything for you. So he is what I've actually been looking for. That company is a Lightning service provider. And what's cool about that is that for using that infrastructure for a podcast app, which only needs to send Satoshis, it doesn't need to receive, therefore it doesn't need to be online 24/7. It's the perfect situation for a podcast app to roll out at scale. And I had a nice chat with Roy earlier in the week, and he is, they're just getting everything together, but they plan to add podcasting into, I think what he wanted to do is, you know, they have what everyone else has, a marketplace where you can, you know, go buy gift cards and stuff like that, do stuff with your Lightning. And in there will be a podcast player, and you just hit it and it turns into a podcast player, and it's basically already a part of your wallet. So then you can start sending value for value sats to the podcasts that are enabled this way. And the idea is that they will drop a reference app onto their GitHub, so anybody can pick that up and implement it, because you don't need a Lightning node infrastructure to develop this for your app for people to use.
That would be great, because that's really what's missing is reference code.
Yep.
Because the developers on the Mastodon, they don't know where to start with any of this mm-hmm. stuff. You know, and it's, they can't start from scratch. It's too big of a learning curve.
Right. And then, you know, so However it happens, once we have an app that people can just go get from an app store or just go to a website and make it a progressive web app or just use it straight from their browser, once we have that, man, then the push comes. Yeah. And again, the machine is working. We have 6 podcasts right now, and every single minute of every hour of every single day, I see on the podcast index node, Satoshi's coming in. So people are playing the podcast. They're using the app. They love all the additional payment goodies and features that are thrown in there. The machine is working. We just need more of the machine.
And I think, like, I don't know how deep you want to get into that, but I think it's worth to mention it while we're pushing this. And it's because advertising is censorship. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, we've talked about that before, but I don't know that we've ever really made it clear why advertising is censorship. We just keep saying it.
It's very easy.
Can you give an explanation as somebody who's been in the media for a very long time?
So first of all, if you have advertisers, you have to realize that they are your boss, and they're your boss because they pay you the money, directly or indirectly. And what for whatever reason, they think that something is not appropriate for their brand or their service to be associated with, and that association can just even be on the same app or device. If they don't want it, then it's not going to happen. Otherwise, they walk. They have the ultimate tool. So what invariably happens is either the content is driven by advertising, also known as advertorial. You can look at most. You can see television shows, certainly daytime shows. I mean, gosh, the soap opera was actually developed around companies selling soap products. So, you know, and they use the products on the show, et cetera. So often advertising drives the content. In this world, the most exciting seems to be the free flow of content and verbal diarrhea, if you will. But people seem to enjoy all forms of that. And you will self-censor because you won't talk about a competing product, or you'll go out of your way to disclaim something, or you will have to be disclaiming anything else you discuss. I'm not getting paid for this. So you're already bringing all kinds of discredit into the conversation with your audience. And ultimately, it can be used as a wedge or a tool against you by people who just don't like you. And they will mount campaigns, very easy to do with social media and today's modern communication tools. They will mount a campaign against you, and they figured out, which is no secret, that if you tell the advertisers that, hey, you're associating with this evil person, advertisers will drop it in a heartbeat. Twitter is full of it. Go look at look at Sleeping Giants, and they will tag brands specifically and say, do you know that your ad is being run on this horrible website? And immediately you see replies, oh, thank you, we weren't aware of this. We let you know that we have immediately stopped this. So it's a lose, 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 lose situation. The only kind of podcast advertising that is not censorship is when it's advertising for your own business, such as this podcast. This podcast advertises one thing, and it is our vision, our mission, the two-part mission of preserving podcasting as a platform of speech and retooling podcasting into a platform of value. And we do that with Podcast Index, and this is one giant commercial, but it's our own, so it's always going to be censored whether you're doing. I mean, and I think you might have mentioned this, but Joe Rogan, who now has, you know, he has a different boss, but he has a boss that is going to sell beyond Tommy John and Squarespace and some nutritional products. They want BMW and Volvo and Delta Airlines and Johnson & Johnson and the big brands. And Joe is known to be controversial, so brands will be taking that chance. But what he's doing is when he has Alex Jones on, he is going into full-blown fact check mode and slowing down his own conversation every 5 minutes to look at a website to see if what Jones said about global warming is true. And he's doing it because he wants to appease the people, you know, technically that are above him.
But there's another aspect of it too, which is like, I'm looking at I've had this print out of Pod News for that other headline I read, but I'm just here looking on it. It says the top podcast advertisers, I'm guessing this is for October, were Amazon at number 3 with a 2.7 million spend, ZipRecruiter at number 2 with 3 million, and BetterHelp at number 1 with 3.7 million, which is an online like mental health counseling service. And I've heard BetterHelp.
Yeah.
I've heard their ad reads, and they're all host reads, or at least all the ones I've heard, and they're terrible. Like, I mean, and what I mean is, I've heard about 3 of them, all host reads, and they're so bland and so disingenuous. But you can tell that,
of course,
if they used the service, they all claim to have used the service. But if they did, they just did it on a perfunctory basis so they could say that they used it. And it's just, it's totally not believable. And most people are not really good at doing host reads anyway. It seems like a skill that you have to really develop over time. Sure. And so one of the, you know, if you're trying to, I don't know what their budget is. I guess they're maybe a Silicon Valley startup type thing. And so they just have tons of money to throw at people. But like that's the other part of trying to drive this is not just the censorship angle, but giving people another way to get paid so that they don't have to sort of, I'm going to say it this way. They don't have to demean themselves.
And I'm
by doing those ad reads that are just not truthful.
And let me run the numbers by everybody one more time. This is what makes the eyes go open when you run the numbers. And to understand this, know that I've been able to convert 3-4% of all of my audiences to sending value for the value they receive. I never say how much. I just say whatever you think it's worth. And on No Agenda, 2 families have survived for 13 years. Well, the last half of those 13 we've survived on the show alone. And put kids into college. So, you know, it's, you can have a comfortable lifestyle. This show, this project has converted at a much higher percentage. And we'll be thanking people in a moment. We can't believe we haven't done that up until now. And if you look at the 100 million podcast listeners in the United States, obviously all over the age of 25, who, and this is the Interactive Agent Advertising Bureau statistics.
The ones under 25 don't have any money anyway.
Screw them. We don't need them in this project.
Yeah.
On average, these 100 million people listen to 1 hour a day, 7 days a week. So let's convert 1% of those people to the pledge model. And this is not something that I can or need to do. Every podcaster has their own pitch to their audience, and every audience member will, in turn, when they hear about this, say to their favorite podcaster, hey, you might want to consider using this system. So if we can convert 1% and we value 1 hour of content at $1, now we have $1 million a day flowing through podcasting. That's a lot of money. And we can.
That's a lot of people making that would be making a living that are not now.
And over time, 1% to an app developer is going to be a hell of a lot interesting.
And I can tell you this: that the podcast app ecosystem is not very large. Mm-mm. It's not at all. You look at podcasts. There's how many? 1.7, 1.8 million out there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's somewhere close to 2 million podcasts. There's only about probably 20 or 25 legitimate podcast apps.
Yeah.
And that may be high. I may be being generous. So, I mean, if you can make 1% out of that smaller pool, you can make a very good living.
It's real money. It's real money. And
it's a life-changing event.
Yes. And what's super exciting for me, and I should be the most jaded guy in the world, when I look at my wallet and I see 3 satoshis a minute coming in, I'm excited. I mean, I look at it several times a day. I go, oh, and it says, oh, another 3 satoshis. Oh, another 3 satoshis. It's not, like it's like likes, you know, it's like, oh, it feels good. It's like serotonin, all kinds of stuff is firing in my brain. I feel good about it.
It's like a, it's like 5/1000ths of a penny or something like that.
But, yeah, but it's, but
it doesn't matter.
No, and all you know is, oh, if I just get more listeners, then it'll be more.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful cycle of life. And this is the value for value model. It works. I think it's going to be adopted by more similar nascent industries as we move forward. It's a perfect place to really kickstart this micropayment economy, particularly with all these splits that go down the line. And you know, you've got me thinking now with this credits tag and all of that. Our entire project is value for value, which means whatever value you're getting out of this podcast or out of the index, the services, the apps, your hosting company innovating and changing, if that's a value to you and you appreciate that, just give us some value back. We ask for the 3 T's. Dave mentioned it, time, talent, or treasure. And we have people who have been pressing the big red donate button on on podcast index. Now, I also have several 10,000 Satoshi donations, but of course, I don't have any name associated with them. But I see those coming in. I think every day someone's doing at 10. So that's $1 a day, basically, which seems to be coming in from the from our Lightning link, which is also is right under the donate button.
What's currently $1 is like 5,500 Satoshis.
Oh, you're right. You're right. So it's about $1.50, I guess. Well, actually, today, right now, Bitcoin is 18,645. Since we started implementing this, Bitcoin has jumped by 30% just because of podcast index.
Yeah, that's it. It's us. It's we did it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you see the little thing, the bot in the Sphinx chat app now?
Slash BTC price. Yeah.
Yeah. And it'll get, well, you do BTC sats and it'll tell you the ratio of sats.
Oh, the ratio.
Dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's a,
I think it's like 5,500 or something like that.
Gosh, that went fast.
It did.
That went very fast.
Well, let me thank some people. There's Michael Winget. He did a $10 a month subscription.
Ah, great. Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. And I can't,
subscriptions are fantastic because that's lifeline. That's a lifeline.
And it helped a lot this week. Specifically, thank you, Michael, because, we had 2 other donations that got canceled. So, I appreciate, Michael stepping up and committing to a monthly payment. That really helps. I can't find a note from you, Michael. So if you need, a note or anything read on the air, just tell me. And I can do that next week.
Throw that on the ground?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a cool effect. You don't hear that anymore these days. I like that. Oh, really? I like the paper crumple. I like hearing it drop on your floor. That's cool.
You should, I'll just take a screenshot one of the, just give me a camera one of these days. I've got an Ethernet cable stretched halfway across the living room. I'm pro.
My desk is finally done. My custom made podcast desk.
You sent me pictures and I love the guest thing where you have the 2 mics set up on the other side of it.
Oh yeah. And they got their own headphone volume and I got a little outlet and a phone charger, USB charging port. And and my wires are all hidden away. I got to do a video of this thing. It's so badass. It's so beautiful. So happy.
Everything that yours is, mine is not.
Right, exactly. Exactly. But I've been in many, many closets, Dave. I graduated from the closet to the Cludio to this place. So I'm that was part of Tina and I when we bought this house. It's like I got to have a studio now. I want to have a real studio and I want to spend some money on it. So, it took me 6 months for this desk.
Guillermo Del Agustin, he spent some money on us.
All right.
Thanks for the work you are doing for podcasting in general. Keep podcasting. To keep podcasting as a platform of free speech is a noble mission. I am Guillermo. I hope I'm saying that right. Guillermo del Gustin. He's great, by the way. He's been super helpful. He's been all over the GitHub, all over podcastindex.social. He's just invested, and he's helping out a ton.
And how much did he send in?
$20.
Thank you very much, Guillermo. By the way, the desk is not coming out. The podcast index, neither Dave or I take any money out of this.
No. Enough to pay the bills.
that was my podcasting money that I spent this on. So yeah. Had nothing to do with the index. I appreciate that. And so he's given us time, talent, and treasure. That's great.
Yeah, he's the developer. He says, I'm the developer of PodStation, an open source aggregator packaged as a browser extension currently integrated with Podcast Index Search. I hope to be able to collaborate more with your project and the podcasting ecosystem as a whole in the future.
I'm looking at it now. PodStation. Is it PodStation?
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah, PodStation.
Guillermo del Gustin. Oh, okay. This is interesting. It is. It's a Chrome extension. Nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't checked it out. Yeah. I thought it was a website.
No, it's here. Add to Chrome. Yeah, I'll just do it. Why the hell not? Add to Chrome. Is it now done? About checking. Oh, implemented. Oh, let me see. So now if I do podcasting 2.0, because that is not listed on Apple, and boom, it pops up immediately. Yeah. Wow. That's very cool.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my goodness. That is some fast-ass stuff.
Let me...
I like that. Does he have a player in here? Episode 11. Yeah, puts it right into a player. Holy crap. That was fast. Yeah, there you go. Huh. Man, that thing is smoking fast. Well, it's a testament to you, sir.
To me?
Yeah, it's doing an index search.
Oh, well, I'll take it.
That's bitchy.
I'll give Guillermo a little bit of credit.
Now, but how do I access this? I mean, now it's an extension, but what does it do as an extension?
Oh yeah, see, I just got it on my Chrome too. Podcasting.
Oh my god! So it has it has the fund god, in
that
there.
Is fast! Holy crap!
Funding is in there. The fund tag. He's picking that up. Yep, that works. Huh. Holy crap!
Oh yeah, I do see the funding tag. Yeah. That's cool. Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I knew because I saw him post a screenshot the other day. Yeah. Okay. I remember this now. And I marked it so I could go back and look.
How does the Chrome extension work? I mean, how do you get to it? I'm not quite sure I understand.
Mine put a thing up at the top, but you know, they changed that in Chrome where it's got the puzzle piece.
I see it. There you go. Oh yeah. It's right up there at the top. Oh my goodness.
You got to pin it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's pretty.
Yeah. It's pretty nice.
Holy crap.
Add a feed. I'm impressed.
Fast. Jeez.
It says add a feed.
What's going on with this speed, people?
I wonder if he supports adding back to the index, because I hope he does. I need to ask him about that, because I would like to have more apps adding but submitting back.
Mm.
David.
Yes. Sorry, David Mettis? I was just blown away by that. I'm sorry.
you're all starry-eyed.
I know, I am starry-eyed. Exactly.
David Mettis gave us a $50 donation.
Oh, wow.
And he says, nice. Thank you for doing your part to protect podcasting as a platform for free speech.
Ah, well, thank you for doing yours.
Thank you, David. I appreciate that a lot. Let's see. We got another $50 donation.
Ooh.
From Damon Kasachik. And he just says, thanks for your efforts. Keep podcasting open. Two very short notes. $50 donations each. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you, Damon. I wonder where Damon is from. Kasachik is his last name. I don't know
how to pronounce that.
Let me know where you're from, and let me know that. Let me know how much I butchered
how bad
that
you
name.
Butchered it.
Yeah. Bob Deegans today gave he donated $10.
All right, thank you, Bob.
And I don't see a note from Bob, And so if you have a note, let me know, Bob, and I'll read it. Thank you very much. And we also had a $5 donation from Pat Deary.
That's a name that sounds familiar.
D-E-E-R-Y. And it's Pat at, well, I'm not going to say that, but it's, it looks like Pat may be Scandinavian.
Really now, Scandinavian.
Yeah. It looks like Pat may be a Canadian. I don't know. Funny. But Pat, thank you for $5. I really appreciate it. And I could not find a note from Pat. So if you have something for a note, let me know. But that's our donors this week.
Yes, and whoever sent us 2 100 sat payments today, and 10, basically whoever's doing 10,000 a day, thank you very much. It's coming in on the node. We see it.
If you want credit, tell us.
Yeah, I have to get into a log, otherwise I could give the thank them for the transaction ID or something like that. Thank you by ID, by node number. This is very, very much appreciated. Thank you to everyone who is supporting this. It's so appreciated because it keeps it running. It keeps the servers running. How many do we have running now at this point? You must have in the 20s.
Oh, God. Why'd you ask me that? We got a lot. We're almost 20. Maybe at 20.
I love that screenshot you sent me a week ago or so of your your command station.
Oh yeah, of the 57 monitors I have.
Yeah, that's cool. It's like, that's the man behind the curtain. That's how it's run. I always wondered why it works. Okay.
I think we have 18 servers right now. I don't have my phone with me, so I can't get into the two-factor, but I think we have 18.
Which reminds me, the podcastimages.com, how's, was it Mike who was working on it? Mike Kelly, I want to say?
Mike's, he's gone off the grid, so I think he must be busy with work. He tends to go offline and come back from time to time, so he's...
How are apps doing images now? Are they using iTunes, or how are they doing the image lookups?
They're still just doing it straight up. Like, they're still proxying through their own back end. PodFriend has a server that backs it, that. Yeah, I think that's the way they're getting around it for the time being. But I'm sure Mike will come out of his hobbit
hole. Because for something like that, just for Mike or anyone else who's interested in this, just moving forward, the Lightning Protocol has something called LSAT, which is basically a way to charge for API access at a micro payment level. Mm-hmm. Then it would be a part of the same infrastructure. And it's something that, the days of free are over. Nothing can just be free anymore without advertising or data harvesting and selling. So be on the lookout for those things to get more prominence in our world as well, as people start to understand how a real, it's like, charging someone $100 a month for API access could be pretty extreme compared to what they're really using or what the value really is. So,
well, that's why David Norman from Hypercatcher switched to using us, was just because he couldn't afford the $100 a month for a listen note. So he switched over to using us.
Oh, he was using them before. I didn't realize
he was using them on a test level. And then he had to start paying, when he put his app in the app store, and he couldn't afford it. And that's fine. That's always the drawback of pay per use can get annoying when you don't know how much use you're going to have, but it does always have on the low end. It always does have the benefit of you're not paying for something that you're not using.
Right.
And that can really mean the difference between being able to launch a product and not being able to.
Right.
I think the LSAT stuff, I don't even know anything about it yet, but from everything that you've heard and I've heard through those Bitcoin guys, it's going to be probably a really big deal.
Yeah. And then finally, And thank you, comic strip blogger. He raised his hand. We desperately need this page that is right front and center from the podcast index landing page. I actually registered newpodcastapps.com. Hello, marketing. Which I'd like to point to that page. Right now it points to the... To
was that you or Tina?
That was Adam. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'm just calling you out.
I'm the domain name guy, man. I'm the one that sits on the couch go like, darkwinter.com. Ah, shit, too late.
How many domains do you own?
Okay, I will tell you. Let's take a look. It's a frightening number.
Is it really?
Oh, it's not that bad. About 250.
Jeez Louise. Yeah. That's a lot of domains.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, from time to time, be like, gee, let me see if I don't have something like that. And then, oh, yeah, I got this. So newpodcastapps.com, I think, is something that I'd like to point hundreds of thousands of people at. So, but I'm not going to point them to a GitHub page.
Why not? They're so pretty.
But I want the fruits of our labor, and I want to be able to promote it. I want to be able to promote every app, and I want the page to be pretty, and I want everyone's logo, and I want the hosting companies, and I want the transcription companies. I want everything on that page nicely categorized, and we can show this is podcasting 2.0. Otherwise, we're just floating around in a little bubble. So. This is the part. Idea. This is why I'm here. So
don't make me learn React, people.
Don't make me learn anything.
It's not going to end up well either way. Yeah. Either way you slice it.
So I know Comic Strip Blogger is diving in this weekend. He may need some help. So whatever we can do, and this page needs to be maintained because it grows, and it's it's where we're going to showcase all of our stuff, and it's where I want to send people, and they can go, I'd love to have chapters or transcripts, and I could do it with this hosting company, and I can get this transcription from there, and if someone winds up providing community chapters as a service, it should be there. All of this stuff, all of this should be on this page. Beautiful layout. It should just look pretty as the rest of the website. So that's my plea for more talent and time. It's something I'm just not capable of. I don't have the skills. I'm very good at hacking up a page and pointing a domain to it. That's about it.
And breaking
podcast. Yeah, I break podcast apps for breakfast, brother. What I do.
I broke three before 9 a.m.
I was just waiting on a train. Okay.
It's a long show, man. We got to end this one.
Anything else? Anything I can do for you specifically?
No. I'm good. I'm like 90%.
Good.
I'm kicking the COVIDs.
Was tough. It was a tough one. It can bring you down. It's no joke.
Yeah. I'm good, man. I'm back. I'm back almost to full power.
Good. Super happy your health is there, man, for sure.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, don't make me learn Node.
Don't die. Please don't die
on me, Dave. It's too many forms to fill out. All right, buddy. Thank you very much. Okay. And we'll be talking again next week. That's it, baby. Podcasting 2.0. It's the podcast where we tell you all about the future of podcasts. We'll be back next week. See you then.